Welcome to Talking Supply Chain. In each episode, you'll hear from the authors that make Supply Chain Management Review such a special publication. This podcast is hosted by Bob Troublecock, Editorial Director of Supply Chain Management Review. Remember that Bob welcomes your comments now to today's episode. Welcome to today's episode of Talking Supply Chain, the lure of preferential treatment, or so you think you're a good customer. I'm Bob Troublecock, and joining me today is Stephen A. Melnick. Steve is a professor of operations and supply chain management at Michigan State University. He's also the author of a series of articles I've been running over the last several years on the supply chain manager of the future. Today's episode is based on his most recent article on preferential treatment in Supply Chain Management Review. But over the coming months, we're going to run a whole series of episodes on all the articles that he's produced.
Thank you, Bob. Steve, I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. When I was putting this episode together, I thought of that line from the church lady on Saturday Night Live. Well, isn't that special? That was Dana Carvey's way of saying, hey, you're not as hot as you think. As customers in our personal lives, most of us want to believe that we're special and as such deserves special treatment. Whether that's free upgrades for our frequent flyer miles, that free glass of wine from the restaurant we used to go to every Friday night, or my wife's favorite, give me free floor mats or I'm not going to buy this new car. There's a special supply chain equivalent called earned preferential treatment. Now that concept was at the heart of research conducted by Steve and his co-authors, and the topic of his article and the topic of today's episode. So Steve, let's start with a really basic question. Just what is earned preferential treatment in a supply chain?
Thank you, Bob. That's a good question, and it really gets at art. But before we answer the question, I just want to do something. I want to recognize the person who really helped me understand this concept way back when, and it was a guy by the name of Joe Sandor. For a number of years, he was the Hoagland Metzler Chair at Michigan State University. And he and I used to have some great discussions. And to Joe, the holy grail of supply chain management, or as he would put it, supply network management, don't get me started, was that the notion of earned preferential treatment. And when I talked with Joe, and as I saw in doing the research, it's a special status that a company gets. It is where they're treated differently from everyone else. I talked about it earlier. It's the concept of the P status, where they're preferred. And that's important. It means the supplier, and this is the supplier at the various tiers of the supply chain, not simply the first tier, but they're willing to treat you differently. They give you access to the best problem-solving team if you have a problem. As one person in the study pointed out to me, when there's a problem, they get the A team rather than getting the Three Stooges, which is some group of people that have just gotten out of getting an MBA and they don't know what's going on. They also, when there's a constraint and we have products in limited amount, they're the company that gets access to the first batch. When we have new innovations, we share them. And in today's environment, this is important. When there's information or developments, we share those with them. And when I started to look at this notion, it became interesting. It wasn't simply a matter of you got a lower price. And we ran into an irony here. And that is, it's in order to get the P status, to be the earned preferential treatment, to get that, it's not necessary that you buy the most or you pay on time. It's really something much more complex, but much more important. And so what we start to find is it trickled down to the first tier, the second tier, and the third tier. And our research pointed out that earned preferential treatment is a real concept. B, it's something that's espoused not only by the first tier, but every other tier. And C, it's important.
Thanks. Now, before I go to the next question, you mentioned Joe Sandor, and when he refers to supply chain management, just a quick aside, when I first met Joe for the first time, he invited me to lunch at one of the conferences, I forget which, and we sat down. Don't know the guy, never met him before, and he goes, you know the name of your magazine is all wrong. Instead of supply chain management review, it should be supply management review, because it all starts with procurement. So that was my introduction to Joe telling me that the 25-year-old name of the magazine needed to be changed, like right now. So anyway, before we explore this a little deeper, tell us about the research you and your team did and why.
First of all, let's understand it. When you talk to people in the field, everyone seemed to understand this concept of earned preferential treatment. And I was being introduced to it because I was working with a defense organization. And at the time, we had worked on a series of projects asking questions about the supply chain. And that was really important to them. And so what happened was we had looked at, for example, in 2017, there was a DFARS, which was a mandate. And we looked at the issue of how were suppliers, especially small suppliers, responding to this? We also looked previously at the issue of, are we or are we not, that is the Department of Defense, attractive as a customer? But in 2019, we were approached by a secretary of one of the branches, and what the secretary wanted to know was, is that branch a good customer? And what was triggering that whole issue was the reality. In June of 2019, Bloomberg BizLaw published an article which pointed out that from 2009 to 2018, the Department of Defense had lost 27% of their supply base. And that was in spite of the fact that their budgets over that same time period had grown by 32%, and that the bulk of these, and I really mean the bulk, had occurred in the small to medium-sized suppliers. So the question is, we're losing suppliers. We don't know why. Maybe it's we're not a good customer. So that was the question that really got us down this path. And by the way, just to let you know, when we gave them the answer, we found out something interesting. They didn't want to hear it. So that's why I can't name the name of the branch.
Here's a question. When you were talking about earned preferential treatment a moment ago that I hadn't thought of before, but particularly when there was the transportation shortage. If you would go to CSC&P, there were a lot of presentations about how to become a preferred customer. And the idea was, well, you know, if you became a preferred customer of the various, you know, shipping lines, you would get your load picked up and delivered before the other guy. Is the preferential treatment, the earned preferential treatment that we're talking about here, the same as preferred customer?
No, I think it's the notion that you get treated differently. And that's an important issue. But I'm going to make a little statement, a little observation. Often when I hear those presentations, and I've seen them at ISM and ASCM, now used to be called APEX, and I've heard it elsewhere in the world, what they imply is do it now, without understanding that this is not a one-time exercise. This is persistence. This is something that you keep doing over and over and over again. And most companies see it as, oh my gosh, we're not getting what we want. We're going to turn over a new leaf. We'll do it this time, and then we'll go back to bad habits. So the answer is, yes, it's the same. But in the presentations that you've heard, my observation would be, how many times did the presenter emphasize that this is not just simply a one-shot deal, but this is a change in how you do business?
So it's not enough to just unload a trailer time and pay your
and
bill.
In fact, that was the thing that really, really struck us about the research. And first of all, what was interesting is the agency that contacted us really gave us a tight timeline. September 17th of 2019, I was approached. September 30th, we rolled out the survey. And initially, the agency only saw four attributes that they were interested in. And what happens, if you know anything about me, is if you give me four, I'll give you more. I blew it up to 21. Initially, they said, this is an academic and he's an idiot. And I said, so what else is new? And then the funny thing is the one contact said he left, he was angry, came back 15 minutes later and said, you're right. And so we rolled out this new survey September 30th. We closed it October 25th, and we had the first round report in the hands of the agency October 28th. And in that time period, we got over 1,300 responses. And the issue is, not only was this important to the agency, this was important to the suppliers. So what you're seeing is a real response that said, we want to do business with you, but you're not, as one person put it, but you're just not easy to do business with. So that, go on. And that's
well, what, that's a, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, all right, you go ahead. I'm going to.
There you are. So I was going to say, so that's a great segue to this idea. You're not easy to do business with. So what does it mean to be a good customer or to be easy to do business with?
Let's first of all start up. When we put out the 21 points in the survey, and by the way, if you're nice, if any of the respondents out there, listeners are out there, I'd be the 21 points are in the article. When we put out the 21 points, the problem we had is 21 points is just too much to understand. So what we did is we did some analysis, and what came back were four factors. And no matter how I statistically did the work, the analysis, these four factors kept coming back at me. They were extremely strong, and they really painted a picture of what a good customer looked like. And let's understand what the four factors are. The first factor we saw in everything we were doing is the concept of relationship management. That is, the buyer had to really understand that they were not managing a buy, but they were managing a relationship. So this included things like joint problem solving, understanding that when a problem occurred, it was not simply one entity, but often the answer was the interaction of the two. It was effective conflict resolution. Now, most buyers and buying organizations think effective conflict resolution is we have a problem, we tell the supplier, you go fix it. And again, what came out of the qualitative comments, which we didn't talk about in the article, was that in many cases, the problems that the buying organization was seeing were caused by practices the buying organization introduced. So conflict resolution is an openness, sitting down and saying, this is a symptom. It's a symptom of a process. And by the way, that concept is not new. It's Juran in the 1950s came up with it. It's now become a law. It says whenever a problem occurs, 15% of the time it's the person's fault, 85% of the time it's the system's fault, yet we blame the people. It's clarity of objectives. And that clarity is kind of critical. It's the notion that what we say from the top and what we implement at the bottom are the same thing. And this was often not the case. The buyer was doing things which were often at direct odds with what the buying organization said. The key issue is the concept of mutual trust and respect. And in many cases, the suppliers really were important players. And then there was openness, a mission statement that people can understand, and the notion that risk had to be shared. And this was important since a large number of our respondents were small to medium-sized companies. Let's face it, they didn't have the resources to deal with risk. So that became the most important. The second issue is communication flow. And by the way, guess what came up number one in communication flow? Beginning of this year, Supply Chain Management Review published, beginning of last year, they published an article by myself and some others on performance measurement. And there it was, number one, performance measurement. That is that the performance measurements were effective, they were consistent, they communicated what was required. The consistency of messaging. That is, what you told people at any point was the same. It didn't vary according to the urgency or the new mandate that came in place. Transparency, being able to understand how things occurred. Frequency of communication, ongoing conversations with the supplier so that it was a relationships. Also early warning, that is, if the buying organization saw that a problem was occurring or there was going to be an issue, they gave the supplying organization a heads up. So communication flow was the next one. And then there was supplier commitment. And supplier commitment included was the notion that we're in it for the long term. You're not replaceable. You're not simply a plug-and-play supplier. And here we saw things like supplier development, evidence of long-term commitment, interoperability, which is improving how the two organizations interface with each other, and also supplier development in response to problems. And what does that mean? Whenever a problem occurs, and we saw this not in this study, but in other studies, it's often an indication of the maturity of the buying organization. If they see the problem as a symptom, then they'll work with the supplier and they'll say, okay, what was missing? In fact, we saw the Ford approach often applied, which is whenever a problem or whenever something takes place, always ask three questions. What went right? What went wrong? What was missing? And that was the third element. So you've got relationship management, communication flow, supplier commitment, and finally, transaction management. And ironically, the organization that commissioned our study, they thought this was the end-all be-all. And the reason that they thought this is and was it was the most visible, plus it was the one that, in hindsight, we could see why they were focusing on it. It gave them an escape valve, because to them, they were not responsible for transaction management. That was Congress. And here we're looking at timely awarding of contracts, a simple request for proposal process, predictable revenues, which was something very difficult to do with the DOD, Department of Defense, overall ease of doing business, and finally, profitability. So what you found is transaction management, which is often the most visible issue, the one that you hear about when you talk with most buyers, was in fact the least important. And so what happened is, as we stepped back, we saw that being a good customer is not paying on time. Being a good customer is building the relationship through relationship management, communication flows, supplier commitment, and transaction management. And that was a real real eye-opening insight.
Is being a good customer, since we all believe that that's what's going to get us preferential treatment, is being a good customer enough?
That's a good question. And to answer that question, I think you've got to step back and ask the question, what are we trying to achieve? And I'll give you a statement. I think what we're trying to achieve was beautifully summarized on February 24th of this year by President Biden in his executive order. If you're not aware of it, and I would ask that the listeners to this interview look it up. This document simply said that the goal of the United States government is to ensure that there is a reliable, secure, capable, and supportive supply chain. And that the supply chain issue is of importance both from an economic and a security perspective. So if you look at those objectives, and by the way, they are beautifully articulated in the executive order, what you're seeing is that's our goal, to develop a robust, resilient, capable, dynamic supply chain, which enables us to pay our people and become leaders in innovation. Then supplier relationship is a critical element, but it's not enough. And why is it not enough? Because in order to achieve that objective, you have to do two other things. And here I'm going to have to give a shout out to someone else. When I got through with doing the statistical analysis, I talked with Dave Frayer, who's the head of our executive development program here at Michigan State. And I asked him if I could talk with some people that he knew of who were kind of considered leaders in supply chain management. And one of the people he gave me the name of was Jimmy Anclesaria. And when I started to talk with Jimmy, and he was very gracious in spending his time with me, what he pointed out is, no, supply relationships are important, but they're not enough. And he, as he discussed it, I saw an image of three elements, which are the critical to achieving the objectives, not only that the agency wanted, but that President Biden wanted to achieve. Number one, prioritization. Every company deals with hundreds of suppliers, if not thousands. You cannot afford to treat every supplier the same. I talk in my classes about the law of criticality, and it says not all suppliers are equally important, not all customers are equally important, not all processes, capacity, measures are equally important. So first of all, let's identify who our critical or key suppliers are, and let's focus on them. By the way, in taking that concept, I found a lot of confusion in the field. We don't know how to define a key supplier. Or it varies, so there's confusion. Then you've got supplier relationships. Supplier relationships are important because they build trust and goodwill. And that's important because it means that suppliers are willing to do things for you as a buying organization that they cannot initially economically justify. But there's a belief that if they do it, you'll do right by them. And that's an important issue. If you don't have that, suppliers are not willing to share their suppliers with you. And also, if they see an obligation which they can't justify, but it's important to you, they'll be ready to leave. And that's something we don't recognize. I was on Friday of last week, I was talking with someone who has a great title. He is the cybersecurity guru of the large prime in the American Department of Defense supply chain. And his title is Supply Chain Cyber Guru. And he was telling me that one of his concerns is that if you push these suppliers, they'll leave. And then suddenly they have unique capabilities and we have to replace them, but we can't. And then the third element is supplier development. And this is the element that really, really intrigues me. And why? Because I'm an academic. So when you push on supplier development, I step back and I look at the research. And the funny thing is, all of the research deals with the first-tier supplier. What we discovered in the course of doing this study and other studies and also working on research in cybersecurity, supply chain cybersecurity, is that the issues, in order for us to achieve our goals, also to achieve President Biden's goals, you have to have participation at the first tier, at the second tier, the third tier, and the fourth tier. And most of the time, we focus on the first tier, and we assume the rest of them are going to align. And that is a bad assumption. It doesn't work. So we have to think about how do we develop not only our first tier suppliers, but also how do we develop our second tier, our third tier? These are suppliers with which we often lack direct contact, but whose actions often have a direct and significant impact on us. So what happened was I saw three elements coming together: prioritization, supplier relationships, supplier development. And those three elements are like a three-legged stool. As we build the strategic supply chain, and again, we're not talking about cost, we're talking about capabilities our organization needs to succeed. We have to think about all three of those elements interacting and being managed consistently and simultaneously. So being a good supplier, being a good customer is important. It's critical. But by itself, it's not enough.
Steve, thanks. This has really been a great overview. So last question. In the supply chain, we're all suppliers and we're all customers, right? If we make something, we buy from somebody, we sell to somebody. When you think about the research and think of, you know, my listeners who are supply chain practitioners, what do you think is the most important takeaway if they're looking to gain a competitive advantage from their supplier relationships or their role as a customer?
Oh, there's several. And that's why when the agency that commissioned the study said, we don't want to hear about, I was somewhat disappointed because we really had important messages. Let me hit the first message. EPT is not tactical or operational. It's strategic. And therefore, in today's environment, if you really need to have the type of benefits, then you have to be a you have to get earned preferential treatment. And that is more than just simply buying a lot. The second thing is that it's not only strategic, it does matter. And to this, I'm just going to simply point out that when we were looking at this study, we found a similar study done in the automotive industry, which is the Working Relationship Index. And one of the things that the authors of that study did was in 2015 or 17, they asked the question, if the suppliers with the highest ratings, if everyone else had performed to that same level, what would have happened? And they made the statement that based on their analysis, the overall auto industry would have gained in excess of $2 billion in revenue or cost avoidance or cost savings. So there's real dollars. And then the third thing I want you to understand is the new reality. I've been in the field for a long time. I've been in the field so long that I was, in essence, present at the at this institution, Michigan State, when the concept of supply chain was first introduced. So I have some memory. And way back then, the concept was good customers fired bad suppliers. That's changed. And what we see in today's environment is the concept that good suppliers fire bad customers. And if you find a good supplier and you're not willing to be the preferred customer, there's a good chance down the road they will fire you. And the final thing I'm going to leave everyone with is that we're moving from a situation where an effective and efficient supply chain is a result of an accident. You know, we just made the right moves. Like the old saying about, you know, if you put 5,000 monkeys together in a room with typewriters or word processors, they'll eventually come up with the collective works of Shakespeare. It's no longer an accident. It's got to be planned for. It's planned for. It's got to be a goal. It's got to be important. It's got to be something that drives you. It's not an accident. It has to occur by design. And what that ultimately means is, and this is what we learned, in the Department of Defense, we saw the paradox. The buyers were frustrated by the fact that suppliers were no longer viewing them as a preferred customer. To them, it was unpatriotic. What we saw was the fact that the Department of Defense, as indicated by this research with one agency, had earned that result because they were not a good customer. So the answer, final takeaway, is it means that being a good customer is more than just simply PR or a one-shot deal or a statement that you read in the mission and vision statement. It is a strategic mandate, and it is something that becomes part of your supply chain DNA.
That's a great takeaway. That's all the time we have today. I want to thank Steve Melnick for joining me. And be sure to read The Lure of Preferential Treatment on SCMR.com. And if you enjoyed this, look for our future episodes. We're going to do one of these a month with Steve on this group of articles that we've been publishing over the last couple of years. I hope you'll be back for our next episode. Until then, for Supply Chain Management Review and Talking Supply Chain, I'm Bob Troublecock. Talking Supply Chain is produced by Supply Chain Management Review and Peerless Media. You can find it on scmr.com, on iTunes, or under SC247, or just Google SC247 podcasts. For more information, be sure to visit scmr.com. We hope you'll join us again.